This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. As we now reach the month of February, meaning we're going to be hitting that All-Star break really soon. But we got a few things to catch up on. Obviously we took our week off and now we're back. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich. I am joined by Mr. Adam Murray. Adam Murray, how do you feel about February now?
It's the same as January, just cold and miserable, and you just wait for March Madness pretty much.
Well, are you talking about just February in general or just February as an NBA fan?
It's kind of hard to get excited about the All-Star game because the game itself is just pure garbage. With everybody shooting threes and all the centers are point guards and, you know, yeah, we get it. They're there to have fun, but just as a spectator, it's not really, you know, 170 to 168.
Well, the last score was, they were trying to get to 200 was obviously the goal and they didn't get there, but they were close. And, the only thing I find interesting about the All-Star game now is that it seems like the players that actually do try are the ones that win the MVP. That's why Russell Westbrook's won it 2 years in a row now. So I wonder who's actually going to go out there and really try, you know, and put out, like, crazy stats. But, yeah, the All-Star game in New Orleans, which obviously had to get deflected away from Charlotte, which was the original location because of the they pulled out there because of the unisex bathroom rule or whatever rule it was that they, you know, that all the politics was going on there. So they pulled out of there and they brought it back to New Orleans. It's the second time they've had in like 4 years. So we're kind of looking forward to it. We had a lot of advertisements going on with the New Orleans stuff, but that's just the All-Star game. We could talk about the All-Star reserves unless you want to just get that out of the way now so that we can kind of do our deep dive into our other NBA things.
Well, you're the one that has more of a grievance against it. I thought the rosters were fairly – I'm content with it.
Let's look at the All-Star reserve. Well, let's try to hit on the All-Star starters again. Let me see if you have it in front of you. If not, I'm going to have to search for it for just a second while you can help me out here.
Don't look at me to bail you. You had grievances. I'm like, the rosters are good.
This is me. I'm trying to think of a good NBA comparison where I'm just like hogging up the ball. I'm like Rondo. I'm like dribbling up the ball, and now I'm just waiting.
You're just Derrick Rose and Carmelo. Yeah. You're just playing hero ball with yourself.
playing with myself, yeah. Okay, here we go. Our lineups here are – oh, wait a minute. I'm wrong. That's the 2016 NBA All-Stars. I was going to tell you that one of the NBA All-Stars was from 2016. I was like, no, I don't think that's it. Okay, you ready?
This is just sinking.
This is fantastic. You could tell that this is the one where we didn't do the preparation, huh? All right, you ready? Are you actually ready?
I've been ready.
You've been ready. Okay, your E starters, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Jimmy Butler, LeBron James, DeMar DeRozan, and Kyrie Irving. I had no problem with any of those guys that we talked about on the last show. Here were the East reserves that were announced. Paul George, Kevin Love, Kyle Lowry, so that makes two teammates from the two Toronto teammates. Paul Millsap for the Atlanta Hawks, which, you know, who was in trade talks early on, tentatively. Isaiah Thomas of the Boston Celtics. Kemba Walker for the Charlotte Hornets, and John Wall for the Washington Wizards. Was there anybody like where you could try to see him sneak in and you had a problem with not making it?
No. Kemba Walker, you know, is well deserving of his first attempt, and Millsap has been proving the same numbers. As for everybody else, it's like, yeah, the only real grievance was, you know, Isaiah Thomas not being a starter, but it's guard heavy, but that's what the East really is. And who didn't make it? Who was the big snub? There's nobody that really...
In the East, yeah, I don't really see like a legit snub, you know?
Yeah,
I'm trying to think. I mean, maybe Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal's had a fantastic season. I don't know if it was All-Star worthy.
Okay, so let's say he had an All-Star worthy season. Who were you taking off this list? Who was less deserving of it?
The ones that seemed like the cut line guys were Millsap and Walker. That seemed like the guys that were probably in there last. So those would be the two. The other one that a lot of people talked about was Joel Embiid. I didn't see it. Like I can understand why some people would make that case, but No, the only other ones I could really look at are Kristaps Porzingis with the New York Knicks and Hassan Whiteside with the Miami Heat. He just had another game just the other night where he had 30 points and 20 rebounds. I mean, he's been fantastic. Detroit, I don't really see anybody there. Chicago, other than Butler, no. I don't really see that either. So those were really the three. Embiid, the rookie.
Embiid, it's not, oh, well, you play 20 minutes every other game. Of course you can go hard and let's see how he is when he has to pace himself and, okay, you now have 4 games in 5 days. Let's see you pull these numbers. It's super
well,
easy.
Well, he does a DNP like every other game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Minutes restriction. Yeah, it's easy to go hard and then, well, you're not going to be there. You know, you're going to be sitting for large stretches.
Is this the new thing for the rookies, especially the ones that have injury histories coming out of high school? Like, we got one coming in about a year, Harry Giles, where you know that they're going to be super careful with him. Like, do you think this is kind of the new thing where they're going to have to play – they're going to have to find – you know, like, you're a bad team, and you know you're going to be a bad team. So there's no reason to rush out a guy and overplay him.
Well, I think now it's just the – I don't want to say the college players are so bad that they're getting exposed. It's just – you kind of have to spend the first year just teaching them fundamentals and how to play. You can't just throw them out there and say, okay, go learn, because, you know, as we saw with Moutier last year and Marquise Chris earlier this year, they just look completely lost on the court and don't know where to be, don't know how to defend,
yeah,
don't
Chris,
know how to rotate.
Chris was the rookie of the month in the West, but that was only because of the minutes he's getting. And he's getting the minutes because they don't really have anyone else for the power forward position. It's almost like a coin flip whether he's going to, you know, and they've decided, okay, we're just going to start Chris.
Yeah, you know? There's, you know, everybody else is, you know, Ingram's on the bench and you watch him. Oh, wow, he, you know, his shot release is getting quicker. It's just, well, you watch him on defense. Well, he's, you know, slow to rotate, and then you watch him
he's
on
lost.
Offense.
Yeah.
That quick step you had in college is gone now because, you know, there's guys 5 inches, 50 pounds heavier who are just as fast as you now. And there's this huge learning curve, as we mentioned with, you know, Chad Ford was taking a lot of heat online because, you know, he said the Celtics should have drafted Chris Dunn because he'd be the best point guard in Boston. And now he can't even get on the court in Minnesota. You know, yes, he's been having, was it hamstring injury or wrist injury or something? But
yes,
the whole season he was supposed to kick Rubio out the door, and that hasn't happened.
Yeah, Rubio's still starting, you know. Now we got a tidbit with Minnesota to get into in a second. We'll kind of talk about that when we get to the West All-Star side on the reserves. But for the East, you know, we just talked about Embiid. The other ones that I mentioned were Whiteside. I don't want to say like a legit gripe, but I can make a case. And then Porzingis, who had a couple of injuries where he sat out because of a sore Achilles. But when he plays, he's fantastic. Now, you know, and defensively, he's probably the Knicks' best defensive player. If I had to choose between him and Millsap, I'd probably still go with Millsap, to be totally fair. And now let's go ahead and look at the Western Conference side of this here. If I can find it.
All right. The Western Conference, we all know the starters. Do I need to even...
Yeah, well, AD, KD, Kawhi Leonard.
Durant, Leonard,
Steph
Harden,
Curry.
And Curry. We all
Well,
know.
The Westbrook thing was, that was going to be an automatic as a reserve because people were, like, a lot of people were stunned he was not even a starter, which was kind of silly. Like, I understand why Curry was in there because of the fan voting, but I think Curry probably should have been a reserve. Would you agree?
Agreed.
Okay, but anyways, bygones be bygones. Russell Westbrook as a reserve. Klay Thompson, okay, that's fine. DeAndre Jordan, I pined for that one. I'm glad that worked out. Gordon Hayward, this is his first All-Star game. Good for him. Draymond Green, you know, we said he was kind of close, but, you know, he was the best defensive player for Golden State. He's, you know, he's hovering around the triple-double range almost every night. He's really good. I mean, he's a really good player.
It's the benefit of being on that team, the way the whole Atlanta Hawks made it a couple years ago. It's just, well, that's why you get in. If he was on by himself, no.
DeMarcus Cousins, no problem there. You could have made a case he could have started ahead of Davis. Marc Gasol, having his best offensive season, you know, in Memphis, had no problem there. That's your All-Star reserves for the West. In terms of the All-Star reserves and who may have gotten snubbed, you know, I have a little more trouble finding some. Chris Paul was automatically out of the running because of the broken hand. So.
Yeah, but he was a snub, which, you know, I guess, like, oh, he'll be picked and then just be swapped out. He was a snub, but okay, Jordan got his spot. As Mike Conley, okay, that's a snub.
Yeah.
And then...
Damian Lillard.
Lillard, but there was no room left for...
Yeah, Karl Towns. But, I mean, they have so many bigs already in the lineup with Davis and Cousins and Jordan. I mean, like, I could see Towns getting it over Jordan for some people, but I'm glad that Jordan got his first spot.
Yeah, good for DeAndre and you know, Gordon Hayward over Gobert. That was just a swap of teammates. The same thing with it. That's why I'm like, okay, good for everyone who made it. I don't have a problem.
It was a little more loaded in the West, where you had a lot more guys where you could have made a case than in the East. Rudy Gobert, I think you just mentioned him, right?
Oh, you are firing on all cylinders today.
Well, let me say this. If you had to go between Gobert and Jordan, which one would you prefer? Like, if you had to start a team at center, who would you prefer?
Jordan provides a little bit more offensively.
Well, Gobert's getting there. Like,
you're asking, do you want somebody who's in their prime, or you want somebody who's still developing? Who's, a defensive powerhouse but still learning the offensive game? Well, what if that game never comes? Okay, well, now you have a Tyson Chandler, just a defensive beast for his whole career, whereas DeAndre, okay, well, now he's been in it. He, can put down these double-doubles.
This one's a little bit out there because it was such a late surge that he put on in terms of his progress, and because he's a second-year player. But what about Nikola Jokic?
Compared to the rest of the guys, who is he beating out? You're beating out Cousins, you're beating out Jordan, beating out Gasol.
Yeah, it's an uphill battle there.
And the beginning, he was splitting time with Nurkic before they made their choice. So you can't.
To imagine they'll put him in the Shining Stars thing if he hasn't been announced already or something like that. The Shining Stars is interesting, or the right, what do they call it? The Rising Stars Challenge. Like, those are kind of interesting. I don't really care for them myself. They play them on Friday nights. And you see some interesting guys, but nobody plays hard. And, there's just no reason to really watch it. I remember the one where Andre Drummond had like 30 rebounds. You remember that one?
Yeah, that's why they try to change it up. But, as opposed to the sophomores destroying the rookies every year.
Something like that, yeah.
And now it's all international versus, stateside guys. And, okay, that's a nice wrinkle. But when you have to start doing drastic change like that, it's never a good sign.
Yeah. And so, talking about the All-Star game, there's really not too much controversy there. I don't remember. The only one that really stood out was Russell not getting the starters nod. That was the one where people were at an uproar. But overall, not a big deal. All these players are terrific players for different reasons on different teams. I did want to bring up Minnesota, because I name dropped Karl Towns, who's still playing great. But one of his teammates went down, Zach LaVine, with a torn ACL. It looked like they were playing the Pistons, it looked like just a normal knee bruise. He walked on it, went to the locker room, did not return. Nobody really thought much of it. It seemed like a regular bang-up type of injury. And then it was revealed that he tore his left ACL. I believe it was left ACL. For a guy with as much spring to his step as LaVine is, two-time slam dunk champion, amazing highlight reel guy. He was also having a really good year shooting from the three-point line. His offensive production was picking up. And now he's going to be going into a year where, it might be advantageous for Minnesota to try to sign him to an extension before he can hit restricted free agency. So it sort of muddies that situation up a little bit for LaVine, of whether he can – how much leverage he still has left now that he's coming off of a torn ACL. But just give me your thoughts on LaVine and the injury.
Well, it's very dangerous taking the legs off a guy who is only pretty much been known for his jumping and relying on said athleticism. Mm-hmm. Now, if he spends his time sort of working on his shot and just shooting jumpers, sitting in a chair, that could be very dangerous. He could come back very good, or he could come back just flat. There's not really.
Yeah, he was averaging 3 assists a game. And that's his career high, right? That's his career level right now. So it's not like he was like a game changer as a point guard.
It
wasn't.
Guard.
They had tried him I think you remember this. They tried him as a point guard when Flip Saunders was still coaching there. As a rookie, it didn't really work out, but it was kind of like a swell experiment. And then they moved him to the off guard spot, which is really where he's effective. But he was averaging 19 points a game. That he's more of a gunner. That's kind of what his game is right now. And obviously, the athleticism and transition, along with Wiggins, is just like paramount. Like, you can't really compete with those two guys. It's the problem is like there's all sorts of other issues with Minnesota that, you know, we've talked about ad nauseum. But just a really hard blow for them. I mean, they weren't going to make the playoffs anyway, but now it's like it's sealed, you know.
Even if he was, you know, came back to all-star levels, that team is just very, very disappointing. And this maybe it's just their learning year and learning how to play defense. And, all you know, you had mentioned, oh, Brandon Rush might replace him, but Brandon Rush hasn't been playing at all. And all of
he had a couple of games where he played major minutes, and then he had a lot of DNPs in a row. So I don't know if that's Thibodeau playing mind games with the young guys, saying that he'll give more minutes to the veterans, or I don't know what it was. But, yeah, he's not an ideal, like, starting two or starting small forward, for sure.
Yeah, and then the problem is Minnesota needs a three-point shooter, just a pure shooter, which, you know, Levine and Wiggins don't complement each other that way because they're both kind of the same player. And maybe this free, if he comes back healthy, bam, you know, great trading chip. And because you can't move Wiggins to the two. Shabazz Muhammad is always going to be behind Wiggins because he can't play the two either.
You can go bigger with Gorgui Dieng, but we've already seen that the Dieng Towns experiment is kind of, it hasn't failed, but it's been very rough, where both guys obviously are best at the center spot. You know, and you can, it's like the AD problem in New Orleans, where you can move Towns to the four, but you have so many more advantages at the five because he can just totally expose the center. But Dieng is not a four. So, you know, it's like one of those kind of log jams.
Well, it's just the problem. Nobody's anything in Minnesota because nobody knows how to really play defense. And they're just,
yeah, and then it's just like the Dunn Rubio problem that we just talked about, you know.
Yeah, it's just, well, these are my five guys. They're starters. I'll just give all my minutes to them. Screw trying to get a rotation going. And it's a very long, cold winter, which was supposed to be filled with hope in Minnesota.
Well, it's always winter in Minnesota. I mean, even when there's hope, it's still cold.
But they had the hope at the beginning of the season. Oh, this is our playoff push. We got a coach. We have our young talent. And then just,
do you see a move?
This season they can't do anything.
I just can't see him trading an injured Levine. Now, let me just open your ears a second. There is a possibility there where, you know, he's coming off of a knee injury. You don't know, like you said, you don't know how good he can be coming back. And you take a major, major risk. And you know a team is willing to take him on knowing what he can do. And because of how young he is and how he can come back from the injury, still being in his prime years. And you can move him for another big name where it can fit a better position, maybe a better defensive player.
Well, it's not like you move him for a name. Don't forget, you know, on the books as having one of the stupidest trades of recent memory when they gave a first round pick for Adrian Payne.
Mm-hmm. And they also re-signed Nikola Pekovic.
You can't predict injuries.
Well, you can't predict it, but it backfired on him.
Well, yeah, that's just backfiring. But at the time when he signed, well, you have to give him the money, and he was a beast. And then his first year, he was good, and then just completely fell off. But with don't forget they you know, Atlanta wasn't playing him. They gave a first round, you know, lottery protected for him, and then proceeded to, well, he's terrible, and they didn't even pick up his fourth year option. So they just owe Atlanta a pick for absolutely nothing. So you can't trade him for a guy to get better because Minnesota is kind of a mess right now. They still have that Orlando stink of, we just have talent, we have players, but none of them are they cornerstones. They were supposed to be, but they all seem to regress this year.
Well, look at the bright side. Aaron Gordon is absolutely going to win the gun. I don't think Zach LaVine joined the dunk contest anyway, but now Aaron Gordon is like a shoe-in. Unless you want to see one of those other guys try to, like, spring up and get him, like Derek Jones from the D League, who I don't know where he got assigned. I know he played earlier in the season with the Suns, or he's still with the Suns.
He never left the Suns. He made the last roster spot for them, and it's just that's what, you know, they had said. Oh, the dunk contest is dead, and then Gordon brought it back, and Levine. Then after last year, it's like, well, what can you do? And if the best person you could get is Derek Jones, who you know, very well might win it, but it's just, well, now you're just getting garbage players who aren't gonna, you know.
Well, DeAndre Jordan's in it, which is interesting, but we've seen this before with big men. The only one I remember that really stood out Well, there's two, actually, in recent memory. One was Dwight Howard, and the other in 2008. And the other one, I believe, was Amari Stoudemire, but that was way back in 2005.
Yeah, Dwight Howard's the only one to really defy it, because it's just – with big men, it's like, well, you can have this awesome dunk, but you just don't have that proportion to make it look like – to make it look impressive to people sitting, you know, hundreds of feet away.
Yeah, the
only
way –
you don't have that awe factor. It just looks, you know, like, okay, he's a big man. Oh, he's dunking. Yeah, well.
Well, how about we just do, like, posterizers? Like, we just get, like, guys that just stand in there and just get abused. Like, if DeAndre Jordan had that, he might win.
Just put Derek Jones down there.
Or Brandon Knight. He ain't got nothing to do on All-Star Weekend. The other one is Glenn Robinson III for the Indiana Pacers. So, you know, good for him. You know, whatever. You know, you'll never be as good as Dad, but, I mean, that's okay. You know, Glenn Robinson – how good was Glenn Robinson? How, like, where would you put him in that pantheon?
Above average.
But which, I mean, he was an All-Star. I have to imagine he was an All-Star at least two or three times. But I just remember he was a number one pick. A lot of people liked him, but the Bucks were so bad. But then once they started picking up steam when George Karl got there, Robinson was like one of their go-to scorers. And he was just a money scorer in the low post. But, you know, obviously the years weren't kind to him down the road, like in the early 2000s, he sort of
He was the number one pick, and he also threatened to hold out for like $100 million contract, which was the beginning of the end for.
Well, that was during the Juwan Howard, Alonzo Mourning, $100 million man era, when all the big men were trying to scrape up as much dough as they could. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, well, you're a rookie. How are you getting paid more than anybody else? And two things about him was, one thing really, which you may or may not remember, he has a ring.
Mm-hmm. He won it with the Spurs in 2005.
He was, part of that early era of just, we need to buy a veteran to sit at the end of the bench, and bam, there he is.
And he had a great nickname, the Big Dog. Because he was a brute of a guy, in the Milwaukee days. You know, I remember he was anchoring that front line for quite a while. I'm trying to remember a good comparison, but GR3 is very different from him. Very different.
Well, yeah, because he's not 6'9 and power forward.
He's got length, though. I mean, that's what goes – that, you know, I saw that in Michigan where he could pull off some pretty neat little moves, you know. He was – I thought he got a little bit undervalued when he was picked up in the draft. I don't know if he was drafted. If so, it was in the second round. But he was but good for him. I don't know what he's gonna do in the dunk contest.
For him. It was one of those things, like, you know, Glenn Robinson, he was good, but it was just that Milwaukee team where it was Milwaukee. They never were, no matter who they had. It was just like, yeah, you're Milwaukee. You've had, Vin Baker, Gary Payton, Ray Allen, Glenn Robinson. But it's just your teams were always just,
They had the one year in 2001 when they got to the conference finals with Ray Allen and Sam Cassell. And I remember Tim Thomas. And then what happened was they went seven games with the Sixers with Allen Iverson. And that was the game where everyone says in game seven they got screwed because the referees just called everything in favor of of Philadelphia. That's one of those, if you go on YouTube and you put NBA conspiracy, that's one of the games that pops up. Game 7 of the 2001 Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, it's just, he was just one of those players who's putting up good numbers on bad teams.
Yes.
Like, I don't want to say he's, like the Boogie Cousins of his time. It's just...
Oh, good one.
You're getting 20 points a game, but your team's... I don't think he went to the playoffs after that. Or maybe the year following it.
If so, it was in Philadelphia as like a role player. Because I remember he played at Philadelphia.
And that's the thing. It's just he just fell off. He started off super hot in his career. Just I don't know whether he got injured. I don't really, I didn't follow.
I can't remember that either. Yeah. Maybe like Larry Johnson. That's definitely what happened to Larry Johnson. Larry Johnson just like he busted his knee in 1995 and he was just never the same after that.
Well, that and. What was it? Being on Hanging with Mr. Cooper? Or what was that? Grandmama and.
Yeah, Grandmama. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just the mileage got on him very fast from just dominating college and steady decline.
Okay, now we got to stop talking about early 90s big men and start to kind of catch some relevance when it comes to the NBA team podcast as we continue along. We had an idea for a segment that we were going to try to elongate here to sort of speak to the whole episode because, January, Adam, is sort of like – it's like a drag of a month. Like, it's sort of, it's late in that month of January, and then as you continue into February before the All-Star break, where, like, you know, November, even in December, like, you get kind of excited, you got some pep in your step. You know, right after the Christmas games, you feel a little, like, rejuvenated, you know, you see some really good form. But it's in late January and early February where you start seeing these guys, like, really dragging their feet, like, I can't wait until the All-Star break, you know, that kind of thing. Have you noticed, but that, here's the thing, though, it's not just players and coaches and, like, workflow. We've seen it really with the teams.
Yeah, it's the teams have just hitting the rookie wall pretty hard, and you could make the argument that this is sort of the time to get on a hot streak, because then, you know, management might, okay, we'll get another piece for you to move up the thing, or maybe it's time to start tanking, and the pieces are sort of laid now for how the rest of the season goes.
My theory here is this. We are in an era now where scoring is so high. Like, the season average is at, like, 102.8 points per game, which is, like, higher than it's been, like, the last, like, you know, 20 years. And what it is that everybody is scoring. Everybody is, you know, is racking up points. But – and you're in a gun-ho, you know, approach, like, the entire season almost these days. It seems like – in January, in the I guess the dog days of the NBA season is what you could call this right now, is that the teams that do the best are the ones that can play the defense and or pick up on the defensive end, because these teams that are just go on offense, they start to sort of wear down. Their offense doesn't click as well on the off nights, and the ones with the good defense are the ones that can pick themselves up and basically pull out wins that people don't expect and not go on really bad losing streaks like Cleveland did, like Toronto did, like Milwaukee did. You know, I mean, we're going to find some examples here in a second, you know, as we do our big segment, which is like who's in the groove and who's in the grind. But, I mean, is that a kind of a fair point?
Yeah. Basically, right, like if this were the season, All-Star break is halftime, even though it's not weighted as such. The first quarter, everybody starts off hot, and then now, well, okay, well, we want to make it to our week off. All we need to do is stay healthy, which, as we've seen, is a problem as of the past few weeks.
Yeah, the injuries are kicking in big time now.
And it's just, you know, you need to just maintain some sort of mental toughness to get to that. We have a 1 week break. We could, you know, recharge, re-strategize, figure out where we are, figure out what we need to do. And it's just sort of willing yourself to that point. Like you said, yes, those who have the defensive patience are the teams that are excelling.
Yeah, the ones with the chops, you know. Like, for example, like if you look at some of the teams that are much like the better defensive teams, like Atlanta, they're sort of on a roll. Washington's defense has really picked up in the last month. They've surged. You know, we'll talk about them in a second. Look at the bad defensive ones. Toronto, even Cleveland is sort of – they're good in terms of defensive efficiency, but they do give up a lot of points, and we have seen Cleveland sort of struggle a little bit. Do you want to just kind of top off this this segment with Cleveland about whether they're kind of finding their groove or whether they're sort of hit the grindhouse?
Well, right now the Cleveland LeBrons are just basically, how come nobody's talking about me? I'm LeBron James. Why I should be getting all the talk all the time.
So you think it's more of an ego trip than it is like a quality problem?
Basically, he's having a little, I don't want to say a tantrum, but, you know, well, we need people in here. What are you doing? You're the one that said get Richard Jefferson. You're the one that said I want Chris Anderson. You're the one that said I need to have J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson. I need you to pay $100 million for him.
David Griffin will fight this to the day he dies because that's what he's paid to do. But this is LeBron's team. LeBron's the GM. He's running the show. You know,
you wanted,
I mean,
a
it's David Griffin's job to balance the books, but it's LeBron who wants the players.
Yeah, well, I need more people. Well, you made me trade for Kyle Korver, who can't play defense or can't rebound. Well, I need somebody who could rebound. I need a point guard. Well, we can't afford one because, you know, they successfully poached Dele Adova away, and all we could replace him is just rookies.
And we picked up Chris Anderson, who tore his ACL when he was, like, on his last legs of his career, when we didn't need to sign him.
Because
you
wanted him because he's your buddy from...
from Miami, yeah.
Yeah, so it's the same thing of, well, this is the people you wanted. Don't complain that you have them.
But What I mean, as you watch Cleveland, you know, they had the weird one against Dallas, which is really, really what capped off the sort of, you know, his little tirade there. When he, I mean, it's not like losing to Dallas is like losing to the Washington Generals, but it's like, it's one of those situations where it's like, okay, we need to have a come to Jesus moment here. I think that moment actually happened earlier in the season with the Pelicans when they went on the road. AD didn't play because he had his 33rd injury of the season, and the Pelicans, surprisingly to the shock of everyone, just had like one of their best games of the season, beat the Cavaliers, and LeBron basically let him have it in the locker room about how, you know, players only meeting and all that stuff. But then after Dallas, I think that was right around the time when the quote came out where Charles Barkley was criticizing him, and he said that there was a new sheriff in town, that Barkley doesn't know what he was talking about, really needling Barkley specifically on like some of his misdeeds throughout his career. Just really like just a real low blow.
Well, it's fair criticism.
It is, but it seemed a little disingenuous.
I wouldn't say that. It was just one of those, like, look, you're an analyst. You haven't played for, you know, 30 years. Who are you to say how the game is anymore? I've been nothing but good. And, you know, if I want to bitch about my team getting it, you know, and then Barkley correctly, they're both right. Barkley correctly called on it saying, you know, this is your team. Don't bitch about what you have. Mm-hmm. And then LeBron's like, you know, who are you? Times have changed since you know it.
Well, the thing is, too, is that LeBron's not a spur-of-the-moment kind of guy in terms of his, like, the media and delivering messages. Like, LeBron James is very, very careful with what he says, what he does, how he does it, who he communicates with to do it. I mean, this is a man who announced he was coming back to Cleveland through a magazine article. You know, like, he wants to deliver the message the exact way that you see it. So for him to go out on Charles Barkley, they're like, oh, LeBron's lost his cool. He's come unglued. No. He had this bottled up for a while, and the moment he had the opportunity to fire back at Barkley, he took it. You know what I'm saying?
He did that, and also it's now who are we talking about? We're back to talking about him as opposed to talking about Westbrook's, you know, insane season or James Harden or
Cleveland's struggles. You know, instead it's about the back and forth talk between, you know, like trash talk between Barkley and
LeBron. Where does trash talk? And it's, well, you want trash talk. Why are you playing 40 minutes a game still? There's no reason you shouldn't be playing over 32 ever. You should be on the harshest minute restriction of all in the NBA, but your ego won't allow that.
Okay, now what are the issues that you see with Cleveland? Like, what is there anything that you see that really stood out for you?
They are who they are. Their team can only be what they are. There's going to be no second gear for them. You have your roster built as possibly as you can, and until J.R. Smith comes back, yeah, you're going to miss his shooting. And yeah, he does play defense, but you don't have a backup point guard because you decided you didn't want one. You'd rather have your 38-year-old friends.
Yeah. Well, you wanted a shooter to replace J.R. Smith. And it's like, well, I'm almost sure J.R. Smith's coming back. So now how are you going to put all these shooters on the court without being a defensive liability? You know, it's going to be a problem. You know, I guess LeBron has gotten to a point where he thinks he can just fit anybody into his defensive approach, because like LeBron is still a really good, a tremendous defensive player. And, you know, the opus of the defense for whatever team he plays for surrounds him and his ability to do things. He's taken a dip. He's not as good defensively as he was in his like Miami days, for sure. But he could still like totally impact a game defensively just by being a leader. And I guess he just feels like he can just take bring any name in, and he can fit him in. Even a Korver, who's the one's coming in? Mario Chalmers is the one that they signed in that tryout.
I don't know if I know they tried him out. Maybe he got signed.
Yeah, we're not sure yet. But you know, because I thought Chalmers played really well in Memphis before he tore his Achilles. I was surprised that he had so much trouble finding a team. But I mean, when you have a bad Achilles, I mean that's bad. You know, it's hard to come back from that, and I understand that. But I guess he feels like he could just fit anybody in there, and then by the time they get to the postseason, the defense will be all right, you know?
Yeah, and you forget about their limitations. It's just, you know, this is my team. If I put him there, he'll do good. Well, Kyle Korver can't defend shit. And
Irving defensively is a still struggle sometimes, you know? He's not perfect, you know? let's go to the Washington Wizards, they're actually going to play the Cavaliers. It's really rare that one of these Monday TNT games that I was dogging on, because I felt like that the Monday slot was sort of an unnecessary like television night for the NBA. But this one actually might work out in terms of like being sort of a tape measure game for Washington. They're going to be playing the Cavaliers on Monday on TNT. They are absolutely stroking right now. They are on a roll, especially at home. They haven't lost at home in like a month and a half, I think.
Yeah, 15 games, I believe.
15 games in a row, and like they were down like, I want to say they were about like 8 games under 500. Now they're 10 games over.
They have just, it's one of those mysterious things that maybe the roster decided to gel and all buy in at the right time. The bench is still horrible, but you know, Oubre, you have become a fan of, and
well, he gives them a dimension defensively on that second unit that has been a real surprise, where teams take them serious, where coaches will take them for granted on that second unit with Wall and Beal and Gortat, and I'm trying to remember the other guy that they sort of fit into that slot, Otto Porter Jr. And Oubre comes in to replace Markieff Morris, who's also played fantastic. But defensively, they've actually been one of the best lineups in the league. They actually like are one of the top teams lineups in deflections. They get a lot. Their percentage of deflections is very high.
Also, with that, I think you have to go with the fact that they're all healthy.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably obviously more teams whose starting five has played more minutes together, but
well, Beal has not missed really any time at all.
Beal has been healthy. Wall has been healthy, and these guys all know each other from the past, you know, what, two seasons. So, it's just a team that is firing on all cylinders right now.
And John Wall, I mean, we've talked about him all the time on this show for good reason. Tremendous point guard. Where would you put him, like, in that point guard class? You know, we always talk about the point guard rankings in the NBA because it's such an important position. But like, you know, you got Westbrook and you got Curry, and I know I'm missing a really huge name because I'm stupid. But where would you like put John Wall there?
The problem is, it's not an insult to say he's, you know, fifth or sixth, because, yeah. Okay, you have Wall. It depends where are you going to put Harden in there? Some people do, some people don't.
Chris Paul.
You have Chris Paul, you have Kyle Lowry, and you have
Kyrie
Isaiah
Irving.
Thomas.
And
Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, it's hard.
So that upper echelon is so high right now. It's just, well, being the number, you know, the seventh or eighth best point guard, well, that's still an elite point guard. It's just, you know, well, the ninth best is just, you know, he's not that good, and there's a severe drop off after him, but that's no fault of his own. He is up there. Is he a, you know, top three, top four? No, because they're higher above him.
Would it be fair to batch maybe the top eight or top nine guys and kind of put them all in the same upper tier? Would that be fair?
That is fair, because
I know they all play a lot differently, especially Curry and Harden, but Westbrook's a freaking force of nature, but you know, they're all point guards.
You know, Westbrook and Harden are shooting guards who happen to play the one.
Yes.
Curry, he just shoots lights out. Yeah, doesn't play D, doesn't really, you know, do
he's
much
a traditional
else.
Point guard who just happens to be a shooter, whereas Harden and Westbrook are shooting guards who happen to be point guards, you know.
Yeah, so it's just up there. It's just very, you know, I guess it's good company to be. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, you could say one of those, well, he didn't become that number one point guard I think we all sort of expected to see him out of his 1 year of college.
Mm-hmm.
He sort of just, you know, he got to his almost to the top and then sort of just, well, he's there. And
well, his assist rate was so high. I mean, he was like – I mean, and that hasn't changed at all in Washington. There was – the funniest part is I think the last game that they lost at home was the game where they scored 50 points, but they – where Wall scored 50 points, but they lost to the Magic. And ever since then, they haven't lost at home. So they've just been – I don't know if Wall and them sort of came together after, like, you know, like we said with LeBron and the Cavs, like a come-to-Jesus moment. But it just seems like – they've really, really gelled together. And Otto Porter Jr. is huge for them. I know that people will laugh even hearing that, but Otto Porter at the small forward spot and his ability to defend, his ability to shoot now, that's been a huge, huge benefit for them.
Finally. I think we're, you know, if for a number three pick and it takes you your fourth year to finally get it, we've been saying, is it time? Is it time to be, are we going to see it? And then, okay, now he's put it together and, you know, he found his role and just sort of knowing, okay, I'm that third option is Gortat tough for some.
Gortat is a rebounder. He's a rebounder and he's really, I read this in the David Aldridge piece on NBA.com, which was kind of revealing that, that Gortat is one of the leaders in terms of scoring off of screens. Like he's one of the best screen guys in the league. Cause he's just such a big, tall guy. You know, he's hard to get around. And Wall's so fast. And so is Beal. You know?
Yep. And you know, Morris is obviously sort of the weak link. But Gortat and Morris, they're just, they
just
are
had
who they are.
A 36 point game, though, Markieff Morris did.
Well, as we've seen, Terrence Ross scored 50. Anybody could go off.
Well, what do you think of this? I mean, the Wizards are definitely in a groove. Do you think that they might have a bit of a stopgap somewhere around the way? Or do you think they're peaking too fast?
I think they're peaking too fast because they have no bench to.
The bench is a problem. Yeah, it's a huge problem for them.
That's the problem, and you know, there's no, you can't, nobody wants to trade for anybody on that bench. So.
Yeah, they've gotten way better play out of Jason Smith in the last month.
Jason Smith has showed up. Trey Burke has
played
slightly better.
He's jumped ahead of Satoransky, which is really the only compliment you can give him so far this year.
Well, Satoransky's not a point guard. That's the thing, is they try to make him one, but he's really not. And basically, Trey Burke has put Sheldon McClellan back on the end of the bench where
Interesting when Ian Mahimi comes back, because you don't want him to ruin the chemistry. But he's a center that you need so that you can relieve Gortat. So you might have to mix up some of the lineups a little bit if you want to put Mahimi in there. You paid him. He's a good center. He's pretty good defensively, I'd say.
We paid him. We thought he was good, and then he's now not playing.
Well, he's injured. He's had the knee problems. So.
He has the knee problem, and then he's just very slow to come back.
Yes, which is, I mean, you don't want another Festus Ezeli situation here, you know. And Andrew Nicholson's just stealing money on the bench. We all know that one.
Which is a shame, because we thought he'd be something out of Orlando, and it's just, well, Orlando is burying him. I don't know why, and... Oh, he's just...
I think we're realizing in Orlando that those players are burying themselves. It's not just the coaching. It's not just Jacques Vaughn. It's something else. There's something in the water there in Orlando where nobody... I talk about that with New Orleans with the medical history, where just like it's in the water. For some reason in Orlando, people just don't want to play hard. They don't want to play hard, you know? Let's talk about the Raptors now, who were the team that was at the two spot for the longest in the East. It seemed like they were going to be the team that would challenge LeBron in the, or at least challenge them in terms of the standings, but it just has not come to fruition. They've really, really had a spill here. They've lost 8 of their last 10. They've lost 2 in a row so far. Their offense has just struggled over the last couple of weeks. Their defense has been bad pretty much the whole season. You know, and I think that might be, like we were saying, that might be one of the problems when your offense is not clicking. If your defense can't hold, and when you start struggling out in these middling months of the NBA season, it's really tough to win games.
Well, we had talked about how just efficient they were, and they had their lineup of doom and just Kyle Lowry's going on the second.
The Kyle
team
Lowry plus lineup, yeah.
Their problem, I think, is just meddling with the lineup, which they started to do because they had their thing. Pascal Siakam was starting. Then all of a sudden, Jared Sullinger's back. We need to get him minutes. And then, well, we put him in. Then let's move Patrick Patterson to the starting. And then Pascal's now DNP. And then every change they made, it just got worse and worse.
I really like Norman Powell, but I don't know if Powell's a guy where you want to give him too many minutes. That's the truth. Like, I think he's more of a – I don't want to call him a Solomon Hill, but he sort of reminds me of Solomon Hill when he was in Indiana, where you want to –
That's not a compliment at all.
Yeah, but Solomon Hill worked in Indiana because he didn't have to do that much. Like, when you start asking too much out of Norman Powell and you start giving him, like, 30 minutes plus, that's not good. That's not good.
Yep, and that's – I think it was just a little case of a little bit of tinkering. And now you don't have that cohesion. Now they just seem a little lost and just losing bad to everybody.
Oh, I mean, they've had some ugly, ugly losses. I think one of them that I saw was to the Suns. It was just like, I mean, you can't lose those kinds of games. They're just bad losses. They're bad losses. You know, one was to the Magic at home. They lost by 8. They only had 40 points in the second half. I've seen teams in today's NBA score 40 points in a quarter. You know.
Yeah, so they're kind of in trouble right now. Will they get their footing back? Yeah. Do they really? You know, the rest of the East is so bad you could just fall to the third.
Look at the opposite way, like with the Wizards, where they're really in their groove, but maybe it's a little too early. Do you think this is actually good timing for Toronto, where they can kind of find their way, or do you think we'll have the inevitable panic move where they try to get a big name in the trade deadline?
Well, I don't think it's a panic move. I think we've been all predicting that they're going to have one.
Mm-hmm.
They're gonna have a move done because they couldn't pull one off last fall, and they didn't sign it. They need a four who's not Patrick Patterson.
Okay, I'll give you another guy who's actually grooving. It will shock you to your bones, but you got to talk about him because I know he's one of your favorite players. Deion Waiters. What's actually kicked in with Deion Waiters in Miami? Is it simply Justice Winslow going out with the injury and now Waiters being sort of their primary offensive guy?
He always was the primary offensive guy. If you ask Deion Waiters, it was just, you know, he's landing his shots. He's not all of a sudden, well, he was taking 7 shots a game. Now all of a sudden he's taking 15. No, he was always taking 15 shots.
He single-handedly won that game against the Warriors. Maybe the Warriors are just a great matchup for Deion Waiters because he was giving them a lot of problems when he was in Oklahoma City in the playoffs.
Yeah, and he's just hot, and that's the rest of the team is just sort of middling out where they are. Whiteside is still playing at a high level. Dragic, you know, well, without talent around you, you don't really look that good now, do you?
Yeah.
And the D League assorted fill out.
Yeah, with the Coral White and guys like that they brought in, you know.
Yeah, so it's just he's getting hot. Miami's not getting hot. And, you know, it's one of those.
Well, they're playing better. They are playing better. I'll give them credit. They've won 10 in a row, actually, which is shocking. I didn't expect that one. I literally did not expect that as I read it, because they were so far below. They were like 11-30. Like, people thought they were tanking. Now they're like only a game behind the New York Knicks, who by proxy we are not going to talk about on this episode of the NBA Team Podcast.
You can talk about them.
There's no reason to talk about them. The only thing that's interesting for the Knicks right now for me is the idea that Carmelo Anthony might be open to a trade, and that the Clippers are desperately trying to scratch up a three-way trade that I don't think is going to happen.
Yeah, it's one of those. Why I don't know why the Knicks are looking for a superstar in return. We need Kevin Love. I don't see how Kevin Love and Porzingis can play together when they're both want to sit and shoot threes.
Well, what did Cleveland side say about that? I haven't really seen the inside.
Cleveland
track
said we're not giving you Kevin Love.
Yeah, you see, I didn't see that side. I definitely saw the Clippers side where they were trying to float together an idea where they didn't have to give up Paul Griffin or Jordan in order to get Carmelo. And then the Clippers started listening once the Knicks said that.
Yeah, they said, okay, we're fine. We'll take Redick and Austin Rivers and but the Clippers,
God knows who, yeah.
I don't think the Clippers have any picks. That's why they need the third team. Cleveland refuses to give up Love. And if I were the Knicks, I'd just be like, give us Tristan Thompson.
Well, they also need – I think they also need the third team because they'd have to give up – because of the number of players that they would have to give up because of the fact that they're like right at the cap apron, like meaning that they can't go over by any circumstances. So they would have to find a way to give up more play, like lose more players – and they don't want to give all the players to New York. They want to try to spread it out. So they want to give it to that third team. But they'd have to drop at least like 4 players, Adam. Like Maurice Spates would have to go. Austin Rivers, who you just resigned, would have to go. You know, Luke Mbamute would have to be attached somewhere. You would literally have to scratch up every penny under the couch that you have.
Well, that's the Clippers' way of doing it, is we have our – we have our starting five, and we'll put assorted crap at the end of the bench. And, oh, look, everybody got injured, and now our team is just god awful.
That's why you never use the stretch provision when you don't have to, like they did. Because you might need it down the stretch. And now they do. But they are.
And they gave away a first round pick just to dump to Milwaukee just to get rid of some, I forget who.
How many stretch provisions do you think we're going to be seeing down the road? Now I think it's a little easier with that looser cap because it blew up like that. A lot of people see Pekovic getting a stretch provision really soon. But
well, he's retiring and
yeah,
they get the money, but so you don't really need to stretch him because it comes off the books.
Yeah, and then we're getting very close to that that anniversary for. Chris Bosh, where you get to the medical retirement, which is going to be hard to watch. It's going to be hard to watch, to be honest with you, because Chris Bosh is convinced he can still play. You know,
and that's the problem.
You know, that's the hard part. You know, and look at Isaiah Austin. They said he with the Marfan syndrome that he couldn't play. Well, he's in Europe now playing. He got cleared. You know, I wouldn't be shocked if he wound up in the D League if he's not there already.
Yeah, in due time. But stretch vision's coming in 2 years. Because the cap next year isn't as high as they thought, and then the 2018-19 cap's going to be, as of now, they said it'll be equal or just slightly above. And, well, all this money you just gave away now.
Yeah, the wiggle room's gone. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to get ugly.
Give me one guy that you see on one of those contracts, one of the more recent ones. Since 2015, where you can say...
Well, you're just waiting for Omar Ashik to be...
Yeah, I was about to say that. that was just a setup to talk about Ashik's bad contract.
Omar Ashik, Joakim Noah, those are the two worst contracts in the league.
Well,
I
can see the guy who replaces Phil Jackson as the GM of the Knicks doing it. I don't see Phil Jackson doing it. There's just no way he's going to stretch Joakim Noah.
Well, you can't stretch. He has 3 years left, so that's 7 years of stretch on there.
Well, that's the thing. You'd have to do it after like year two, like in 2018 or 2019.
Yeah, then you have 5 years of that. That's the problem. Is you literally have to wait till the last year. So he's just taking up valuable space.
Okay, let's just hit some sort of like rapid fires on some teams and players that you tell me whether they hit their groove or whether they've hit their grind. I'm gonna hit you with Isaiah Thomas and the Boston Celtics.
They have problems soon.
But they've won six in a row, and Isaiah.
They are hot right now, but
the fourth quarter of games.
They are looking good, and the problem is you have Avery Bradley who's out, and Jaylen Brown has looked good in that starting lineup and just sort of filling his role and just being an energy guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a nice complimentary piece. Amir Johnson is just – he doesn't look like he has much left. They said he's battling a back injury right now, but he just looks like there's no – the tread on the tire is very barren. Just you have no rebounding. You could be as hot as you want. You're relying on Isaiah to literally score 20 points every fourth quarter just to win by three.
Yeah, I mean, they still got that whole lineup there with Rozier behind him. I see what you're talking about with Jaylen Brown. That's the first – I'm going to be honest with you. That's the first time I actually noticed that with Jaylen Brown. What happened to Avery Bradley?
He had – I want to say it was an Achilles injury or something. But it was just, he had a strain, and then all of a sudden, he's in a walking boot.
Yeah, he played big minutes against the Lakers, I see here. That's got to be the most minutes he's played in any game so far this season. Al Horford is just like a role player. You know,
Horford wants to shoot threes, and that's what he's become right now. Is he has taken that Kevin Love? I'm no longer a power forward.
He's a tremendous role player, just based on what he can do, what his capabilities are. But
he is light years above anyone who they had in that position.
Mm-hmm.
It's just there's no need for him to be that Atlanta. We don't need you to score 30 points. We need you to be that awesome passer that you are and facilitate and kick out the ball to Jay Crowder and have them keep shooting threes, because you notice their three shooting percentage has gone up since last year.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to him and, you know, him opening up space.
And what do you think of Brad Stevens, all-star game head coach?
Good for him.
I mean, there's always an angle that they try to make of it, like, oh, this is gonna do so much for him in the season. It's like, no, it does nothing. This does absolutely nothing. Like, no one even remembers this 3 months from now that he coached the All-Stars, you know?
Yeah, it's just a little blurb on your Wikipedia page. But, you know, it's one of those, you know, good for him for, you know, he's the crazy mastermind at that young age.
Okay, the 8-spot race in the West. Have we hit a groove or we've sort of hit a grind now that we've had, like, New Orleans drop off, Sacramento is kind of, you know, is sort of dwindling a little bit. But you do have Dallas making a comeback. You have Denver surging. Portland is right, is still in that same spot. Like, are you more interested or less interested now that we've gone through a whole month of January for that 8th spot in the West where a team with a losing record is very likely to get it?
It's like the old, you know, every few years in the NCAA, it's the curse of the number one seed. Once you get number one, you automatically start to lose. Once you get the eighth, you know, the Denver Nuggets are 6 games below 500, and an awful team by all accounts. Mm-hmm. And they are currently a half game in the eighth spot against Portland.
Well, thanks to the Jokic revolution, pretty much.
You know, you could say the Pelicans are only 3.5 games out.
Adam, they have the same record as the Minnesota Timberwolves. They are toast.
That's the problem.
They are toast.
Yeah, Minnesota Timberwolves, you know, you're 4 games out of the playoffs. Well, that's anything's possible for them.
Now, Sacramento beat the Warriors, which, look, regardless of where they go in the playoffs, that win for them, in terms of momentum, is huge. That's huge. You know, I can easily see the Warriors having a real conundrum about, look, we can't ever lose to the Kings again, that kind of thing. But
and another problem with the NBA is having right now is the number 7 seed in the East, Chicago, is also below 500.
Yeah, they're playing a little bit better. You know, they've won. They've been kind of markedly average. You know, 5-5 of their last 10.
So having 13 teams above 500 that's not a good sign. And it's just like, you know, we talk about Boston and like, well, they're hot, but they're really not good. Washington goes on their streak. Yeah, they've shot up to number 3. Atlanta just plays better than average, and they're at number 4. And mediocre Indiana is, you know, they're in the playoff hunt. It's just that's the problem. It's just these teams who are all fatally flawed.
Yeah, and Milwaukee and Charlotte. Now, they made a move between the both of them. Now, I don't have the exact details of the move, but it involved Miles Plumlee going to Charlotte.
Miles Plumlee for
Spencer Hawes. But
and
there was a third guy in the mix. I cannot remember who the other guy in the trade was. But I'm going to actually look it up while you distract me.
It was a complete panic.
But that's the point of it. It was like a very forgettable whatever trade for two teams that it didn't make. It was like a lateral move. It was actually Roy Hibbert. Roy Hibbert went to the Bucks.
How sad that Roy Hibbert has just been the afterthought of a Spencer Hawes trade.
He's a walking relic. Like, you know, he is the, you know, when he was with the Pacers, that was the Frank Vogel bang him with, you know, with physical defense type of approach. That has sort of gone by the wayside in the NBA. You know, his position is now outdated.
His position is outdated, and then the sad thing is he backs up Drummond, who is also, Monroe, who is also outdated.
I'll give you another one who's sort of hitting the groove. D-League call-ups, now that Yogi Ferrell has earned himself a 2-year contract after playing his ass off for the Dallas Mavericks and helping him surge to that spot, you know, to at least try to compete for the 8th spot. Are we going to see more D-League call-ups, or do you think this is just like a once-in-a-lifetime deal for Yogi Ferrell?
No, there's always, you know, it's, we got to wait till Adam mentioned Sean Kilpatrick for Brooklyn, and there's always one player who, look at Miami Heat, every year they got somebody who gets a call-up and then all of a sudden manages to parlay that into a contract.
Mm-hmm.
There are players there, and they're all, you know, you have very good ones. Just Yogi Ferrell just got the right time. Is he really that great of a player?
I thought he was really good at Indiana. And I remember the game in the tournament where they played Kentucky. Kentucky had Tyler Ulis and Jamal Murray. Indiana had Yogi Ferrell, Troy Williams, and Thomas Bryant. And they had that guy. Who's the one that hurt his knee for Indiana? I'm forgetting his name right
now. OG Anunoby?
Yeah, OG Anunoby. And Yogi went toe to toe with Tyler Ulis, basically outplayed him, and just had a tremendous game. Got to the Sweet 16, they lost to that awesome Carolina team that had Bryce Johnson and all those dudes. But I thought he was a tremendous college player. I knew that size would be an issue for him. I knew he would automatically be counted out as a prospect because of that. But good for him for playing hard. You know, it's a tremendous thing.
Oh, good for you. No, it's one of those just right place, right time type of moments, because, you know, he was in Brooklyn and didn't stick there. And as you see with a lot of these, you know, a lot of these D-League players, it's just, oh, it's a lot easier if you have Harrison Barnes, who having a very good season.
They run a ton of isolation, though.
Dirk was healthy. Seth Curry is having, you know, a renaissance for at his level as best as he possibly can.
Bogut might be coming back soon, I believe. You know,
so yeah, you get players around you who are good and you could fit with them. Yeah, it makes you a lot better as opposed to just, well, I'm struggling just to, you're on miss. But
so you think D-League pickups are going to hit their groove simply because this is the time of the year to do it? I mean, if you look at it here, I'm going to just give it to you from the month of January on. Pierre Jackson got picked up twice. Chasen Randall with the Sixers. Quincy Acey, who's actually playing pretty well with the Nets. Akoro White, who we just talked about with the Miami Heat. Gary Neal with the Hawks, but I don't think he's on the team still because they had to move him pretty quickly because of the Dunleavy move. Am I right?
I believe so. Now, Pierre Jackson went to – he was there at Dallas.
He was at Dallas.
And he was putting up decent numbers at Dallas, too. So it's not much of a...
Yeah, the definition of a D-League, like a really good D-League watch guy slash but a fringe NBA prospect is a guy that we cut right before right in the middle of the season, Anthony Brown. He's with the Magic now. Johnny O'Brien, who was a big man out of LSU, originally drafted by the Bucks and cut. He's with the Nuggets now. And then Yogi Ferrell, who we just talked about. Lamar Patterson with the Hawks. He's bounced between assignments back and forth. Mike Toby, Ray McCallum, and also Briante Weber with the Warriors. I'm surprised that he got snuck out of Miami like that. I thought Miami would find a way to hold on to him with the
Skyhawks. Well, Miami wanted him, but you know, you don't have, you know, anybody could pick you up. And if I were him, I'd be like, of course I'll go to the Warriors.
Well, they also had that D-League showcase in Mississauga. Did I say that right? In Mississauga, Ontario?
Yep.
And that's where it was. The thing about the D-League that's always fun is just the fact that people put up so many crazy numbers. You know, like, for example, on the prospect watch is Briante Weber at number one. And he was tremendous. So was Ray McCallum. But Ray McCallum's another guy who, you know, you like. But it's just a guy that he has trouble holding water in the NBA. You know, every time he gets on a team, he just kind of like – he's just eh. And then he's gone, you know.
Well, because you're just meant to fit there, and, you know, like we had joked, you're like, I don't even know who Xavier Mumford is. How is this guy starting on the playoffs for Memphis?
Yes.
And it's just, well, you're just there literally because of injuries. You don't see good teams. You don't see Cleveland like, oh, I need to go pick up a 10-day guy here and there. Just you don't do it to rest, you know, players you have. You do it because, well, I literally don't have enough bodies to field and I need six fouls.
Yeah, some of these names that you hear are going to be familiar names, like Corey Jefferson. We've heard quite a few times, you know, in the NBA. Ryan Kelly, we know from when he was with the Lakers. Will Bynum, who is still hanging on for dear life in the D-League. There's a white guy named Josh Maggette. Obviously no relation to Corey Maggette. Russ Smith, who had that 65-point game in the D-League a couple of years ago. Phil Pressley, as you call him, but his real name is Phil Pressey.
Phil Pressey from Missouri.
Axel Topain, who the Nuggets picked up from France like in the middle of last year. Manny Harris, who's been around forever. Jordan Crawford played for the I think he played for the Hawks and the Celtics. Am I right?
Jordan Crawford from Xavier?
Yes.
The Celtics traded him to Golden State for a first-round pick way back when then. Mm-hmm. Then he went off to China and then...
Hollis Thompson, we know from the Sixers, you know, in the tank days, the process. Well, are we still in the middle of the process with the Sixers or, I mean, are we kind
of... Oh, what happened to their playoff push everybody's going to have? you know, it just comes down to people don't want teams to be bad.
All right, I'll give
even you... Even if they're your rivals.
I'll give you the top 10. We'll finish here. Dakari Johnson for the Thunder is number 10. Xavier Mumford is number
Xavier. Three. He just went over to Europe this past week.
Okay, so he's basically off the off the table is what it is the best way to say. He was playing for the Swarm, which has to be the Hornets D-League affiliate. Jalen Jones, who played at Texas A&M last year, he's with the Maine Red Claws. I highly doubt we're going to see him with the Celtics. Quinn Cook, who was with that Duke championship team, he's with the Charge. The Charge is associated with which team? I'm totally forgetting.
That would be Cleveland.
That's the Cleveland Cavaliers.
As the Canton, Ohio.
Yeah, his teammate is Eric Moreland. I remember him with Dallas. Big guy who originally played at Oregon State. Keith Benson, who was drafted by the Atlanta Hawks. He's with the Skyforce now. The guy who played great in Ontario was Abdul Nader, who was a second-round pick with the Celtics. Any shot, we might see him.
He is not in Ontario. He played well in Ontario.
He played well with
in
Mississauga for the D-League Showcase. Yeah.
Well, he played himself. He did this because he played so well in the summer league, and he played better than it's one of those like, yeah, but do you want him or do you want just Gerald Green, who knows how to hit an NBA shot? And James Young we've already written off as expected.
Well, the funny part about that though is that they had to cut RJ Hunter in order to keep James Young because they couldn't keep both of them. So
yeah, and then everyone everybody was taking a big stock in that decision. It's like, well, what is that? That means absolutely nothing. You have your two first round picks from last year and you have a top pick coming from this year. Those spots that you're talking about are going to be all cleared out anyways.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's starting to pick up. It obviously, once you get into the, like now that the injuries are picking up, with some of these stars, some of these role players, once you get past the All-Star game and contracts become guaranteed and moves are made. So you have interim periods where players aren't available because they're on the move. That's when these D-League guys start to really pick up and then teams start to tank and they don't want to play as hard once they're out of the playoff running, which we're going to see plenty of. Or will we? Do you think the West, that bottom in the West, that eighth spot's going to bottom out so badly that some teams will legitimately think like Minnesota, like New Orleans, like Sacramento, like they're really got a shot?
Sacramento thinks they really have a shot because that's Sacramento and, just their constant dysfunction. And maybe it might be good for, maybe it's one of those things where maybe they kind of need that for them, for some sort of stability. But and the same thing as, what does another lottery pick do for you with look at the teams that are bad already have a ton of lottery picks on their roster. It's just getting that experience, getting blown out by Golden State. But yeah, but you're on the stage. You know how it is. You can feel it. You get that hunger for it as opposed to, all right, we played good enough. Let's go home.
Yeah. So, and all, by the way, Curry and Durant sharing Western Conference Player of the Month drives me so freaking crazy. For the month of January. Like, why do we do this, Adam? Like, was there politics behind this where it's like, well, if we give it to Curry and not Durant, Durant's going to be mad, his Nike people are going to call us and all this stuff.
It's all...
I can't stand it. I can't, like, when the Hawks did, when the Hawks, all five of the starters won Eastern Conference Player of the Month, like, it drove me insane. I was like, no, we can't do this anymore. It's one player.
That seems to be our big running joke we have because now, one by one, they're all off that team.
Well, Millsap, All-Star Paul Millsap is not.
He's the lone
Ranger, huh? Remember that old picture of Damian Lillard with all the old-time starters when they had LaMarcus Aldridge and Nick Batum and Robin Lopez, and all of them were gone except for Damian Lillard.
No, nothing on Damian Lillard, but is there anyone luckier than him?
Well, that CJ McCollum. Lucky, though? Oh, that they got CJ McCollum in the draft.
That McCollum took off on year three because McCollum, he's an undersized two, so he's just, he was brought in essentially as the backup point guard. And if he didn't, if he sort of faltered out, just became mediocre, it would have been, well, this is your team. You're the $100 million guy. You ran everybody away. Now the team's garbage, and you're just the high-priced guy in a garbage team.
Well, they also picked up Mason Plumlee in what looked like at the time a throwaway trade, and it turned out to save their front court, at least in the interim. That was another deal that really, really worked out for Lillard, and as he's the leader of the Blazers now. To kind of go in full circle with the All-Star talk to start the show, like Lillard being snubbed, like I think that's the story of his life because that's happened with Team USA. He got snubbed from Team USA in 2014 and he refused to practice for Team USA for Rio de Janeiro. So this idea that, Damian Lillard's always counted out, I guess it kind of works for him,
And the funny thing is he could have easily made it in 2016, but nope, you wanted to have You know,
He wanted to have he wanted to stand on his soapbox, you know.
Yeah, and the same thing with, you know, a lot of these players.
Well, John Wall didn't make it either, and the theory is that that's the reason why he didn't work out either. Because, but you know, I think he had to get his knee cleaned up anyway. But the theory was that because he and Lillard didn't make the team in 2014 when Coach K was like picking the teams or Colangelo was selecting the teams, that they didn't even want to try out for the next one because they knew they had hurt feelings. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I can't believe that kicks in. Anything interesting as you go through this lineup? You know, on TNT on Thursday, the game this is going to be Boston at Portland in the late game. The early game is the Cleveland at Oklahoma City. We just saw OKC play the Cavs in Cleveland on ABC, and the Cavaliers kind of took care of them pretty swiftly. I mean, are you expecting anything unique as we get closer and closer to the All-Star break?
I say the same thing every week. We don't need to see the same teams every week on TV. The Lakers were on ESPN last week. The Knicks were on ABC.
Well, there's one big one, and that's Golden State visiting Oklahoma City on ABC. That'll be Durant's.
Is that a big game?
Well, in terms of like narrative, it is.
And narrative, and that's why I think I got distracted from the Earth thing. It's all narrative. Well, can these two guys play together? Remember, you know, yeah. Well, this is Curry's team. Well, let's make them both the player. It's storyline, and mm-hmm. we need to make it seem interesting because people aren't talking about Golden State as much as they should, really. And with Enes Kanter out, that's going to be
That's got to be one of the dumbest injuries I've ever seen. You hit the chair on the bench and you break your arm, your forearm on the chair. What an idiot.
Well, that's amazing. You broke your forearm and not your wrist or your hand.
Supposedly the lip of the chair like swung up and that's where the break happened.
It was one of those super strange injury. But
remember when Brandon Dawson for Michigan State punched a wall and broke his hand because he was mad at himself watching game tape?
Yeah, there's cases like that all the time, but With just having no second unit spark, it's just going to be, you know, we've seen with Sabonis and Roberson, you can't have all these 3-and-D guys who aren't offensive. It's just, well, you know, Westbrook's probably going to score 50 on his own, but it's not going to be a close game.
And our Knicks count for national television this week? Two. Two.
And that's the problem with making these... Two. You know, I get it. You have to make your lists back in September, but just give – that's the problem. That's what, you know, sort of hampers the NHL is, well, if you keep – you don't have any notable stars and you don't – this is just over-reliance on them. You can't develop – how come we're not developing new guys? Well, we finally put Minnesota on after 17 years of not putting them on.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's just, well, you want to develop these all-stars. Well, then put them on in a national game here or there.
Yeah, they host the Clippers on a Wednesday, and then they host the Spurs on a Sunday afternoon. I got to stop with this. I'll ask you this. Kawhi Leonard. Has he become like a volume scorer? Like a 30 point per game guy?
Not that high.
But that's what he's been doing for the last 2 weeks, though.
As who can't have a good 2 week run? Who can't have, you know, a stretch of here and there? And
yeah, I mean, defense is still the name of Spurs' game. You know, they've kind of gone back to where they used to be. They're offensively still very efficient, but yeah, it seems like Kawhi is picking it up. Anything you want to talk about before we start kind of wrapping up here? We were kind of like the Wizards. We really stunk to start, and then we found our groove late.
Well, when you start adding segments on the fly out of nowhere, well, let's lead off with this piece
on. You're going to blame me for that.
Yeah, well, we had a game plan. You're just like, let's throw the script out the window. Let's try something
it's
different.
It's like LeBron after a Tyronn Lue time. Ah, forget that. Let's just draw this up, you know?
Yeah. No, it's like I said, we're just in the season. The All-Star game's coming where everybody can sit back and take a breather. Then it's just back to ABC games of the same seven teams. And then, you know, we'll start getting into the playoff
push.
The trade
deadline, yeah, all that stuff.
We have some fun shows lined up.
Yeah, we have some more theme shows going on that we have planned. And some of them are really, really interesting. Like, you know, some brainchilds of yours. So I know you're going to bring the Thunder, right? Not the Oklahoma City.
I will bring the Thunder. I'll bring the Heat.
You bring the Thunder. You bring the Heat. You'll bring the Swarm. You bring the Skyforce. You're going to bring all of that?
Yes.
Are there any other non-S teams that you can bring?
You said the Storm?
There's the Storm, the Seattle Storm, yeah. Oh, by the way, I didn't get your hot take on the Deladon trade.
She got traded from Chicago?
Yeah, it's like the WNBA version of the 2007 Kevin Garnett trade. It's like the biggest trade in WNBA history.
The sad thing is, I didn't know there was a trade, but yet I somehow knew she was on Chicago.
All right, we got to finish this. All right, on behalf of Matt Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Go read up on that trade. It's a big trade, guys.